62, and west winds of 5 to 10 miles per hour. By tomorrow, mostly sunny, high of 87, and then tomorrow night, mostly cloudy with a low of 70. Well, if we think we're out of the woods in terms of the rain, not quite. By Wednesday, we're expecting a 50% chance of showers and thunderstorms and a high of 91, southwest winds of 10 to 20 miles per hour with gusts of around 25 miles per hour. Wednesday night, showers and thunderstorms are likely, 70% chance of rain and a low of 65. Thursday, though, we are going to see a rapid drop in temperature, a high of only 80 degrees, and then Thursday night, mostly clear with a low of 58. So some pretty wild fluctuations in the weather for the rest of the week. Right now, it is 72 degrees at Friends Plaza in Urbana. Let's take a look at the weather around the state at the moment. In DeKalb, it is partly sunny and 73. Chicago at O'Hare Airport, 75 with some clouds. It gets cloudier up around Midway. In Joliet at the moment, mostly sunny and 74. It's cloudy in Macomb and 74 degrees also. In Bloomington, Illinois, partly sunny and 73. Decatur and Peoria, 72 and 74 respectively. It's partly sunny in Decatur and mostly sun in Peoria at the moment. Clouds over Springfield right now and 71. In Rantoul, it's mostly sunny and 74. In Champaign at Willard Airport, partly sunny and 76. Right now it's 72 degrees, overcast at Friends Plaza in Urbana outside of our studios. You're listening to the Afternoon Magazine on WILL.
WILL programming is made possible by Columbia Street Roastery, roasting coffee daily at 24 East Columbia in Champaign. Also offering a variety of tea and chai. Open Monday through Friday from 9 a.m. to 5:15 p.m. and Saturday mornings from 9 to noon. More information is available at 352-9713.
You're listening to WILL. I'm Chris Berube. At the end of the legislative session on May 31st, Illinois lawmakers approved what they called a compromise measure to legalize and regulate the carrying of concealed handguns. Governor Pat Quinn's office says he's carefully reviewing the measure, but advocates on both sides of the gun debate say that a provision requiring hands-on training is an important part of the bill awaiting the governor's action that, well, could be a good place for compromise between the two groups. Illinois Public Radio's Peter Gray visited a Central Illinois gun range to learn more about what will be required of people who want to carry a loaded weapon in public.
Most days, Ron Darnell hosts sportsmen at his gun range west of Bloomington. Teams blast clay discs out of the sky or pop holes through paper targets for points.
We have quite a club here. We do retail sales, both in firearms, ammunition, and a lot of repairs.
Today, Darnell is closing a bit early. A group of uniformed officers have booked the range for the rest of the day. Their target practice is for public safety, not for sport.
Ready, stand by, fire.
They're armed guards, hired by the government to protect courthouses and other federal buildings. They regularly prove their skill and reaction time with service pistols, just as police officers do. Ron Darnell says many people he sells guns to have a lot to learn about their care and the law. He says they'd benefit from some of the training and testing law enforcement have to undergo.
We're seeing an awful lot of new shooters in the game, and they really need some instructions, training, and some legal aspects covered. So when they do have to make a decision, which is a big one, to use a firearm for protection, they will know the laws and what they'll be involved in after the altercation happens.
Legalizing concealed carry in Illinois will likely mean a flood of new customers for range owners like Darnell. That's because lawmakers wrote 8 hours of mandatory training into the legislation, a number that later doubled as House Speaker Michael Madigan threw his political weight behind it. Madigan's spokesman Steve Brown calls 16 hours rather than 8 hours a common sense approach.
We looked at all the states, and I think this number will be the largest amount of training required in the nation. A police officer goes through at least 40 hours of firearms training. Some people thought that would be a good number, but then thought, well, that may be an unrealistic goal to try and achieve. Clearly, the more training a person has with something as dangerous as a loaded firearm makes sense for the whole population.
In addition to the initial 16 hours of training, gun owners wanting to renew a permit after 5 years will have to return to the range for a refresher course. When it comes to hours, Illinois went above and beyond standards set by other states, but lawmakers decided against something else other states do, make shooters test or qualify using the same gun they plan to carry in public. Greg Sullivan says that would have made sense for Illinois.
If you're going to carry a weapon and ever have to use it, you want something that you're familiar with, that you've qualified with.
Sullivan is head of the Illinois Sheriff's Association. Some of the sheriffs he's heard from wanted the full 40 hours of police-style training for new permit holders. He says the general public doesn't need tactical training police receive. For Sullivan, ensuring that people carrying in public will do so safely is less about quantity of time and more about quality of the instructor administering the test.
I don't think any firearm instructor in his right mind is going to give anybody a certificate who they don't think can handle a weapon safely. You can flunk this course, yes. They want people out there who are carrying safely, responsibly, and if that's not the case, they're not going to pass them.
Back at Darnell's gun range near Bloomington, I meet Armed Security Officer Frank Whitmore. He guards a federal building in the Quad Cities, and he's recently gotten a side job.
About a year ago, I became an NRA basic pistol instructor. There's a lot of guys that are starting to do this.
It's people like Whitmore who the state is counting on to take on the likely flood of concealed carry applicants, people who are already qualified to carry a gun while on duty in public and certified to teach others how to carry, clean, and store a weapon. Whitmore says a big part of training is simply getting misinformation out of people's heads.
A lot of people who don't know about guns, don't know how to handle them safely, don't know that they don't what they can and can't do. I mean, unfortunately, so much of what we learned today is learned from television.
People on both sides of the debate over guns in Illinois agree that hands-on, live-fire training is important for those who plan to carry a loaded weapon in public. Those seeking a permit will have to find a state-certified instructor. The Illinois State Police is responsible for finding, screening, and certifying trainers within 6 months of concealed carry becoming law. State police with an understaffed office is already struggling to process record numbers of firearm owner ID card applications. The agency has asked for additional money to fund the rollout of concealed carry. I'm Peter Gray.
And this is Illinois Public Media, WILL AM 580. If someone told you that if someone sold you a lemon, would you first think of a Datsun or a Dachshund? In this week's Legal Issues in the News, commentator Travis McDade discusses Illinois' latest consumer protection measure known as the Puppy Lemon Law.
So the Illinois legislature has passed something to protect consumers buying from pet stores. It's called the Puppy Lemon Law, which is an adorable title because it has puppies and lemons in it. But like most not-quite-what-they-seem legislative titles, the USA Patriot Act, I'm looking in your direction, there might be something unreconciled between what is announced and what is delivered. In the case of the Illinois Puppy Lemon Law, at least two things. First, it's about more than just puppies. The legislation is about dogs and cats, but I guess the Illinois Puppy and Kitty Lemon Law doesn't have quite the same ring to it. When asked for a comment on the fact that the law deals with cats but does not mention them in its title, the spokescat for the state of Illinois yawned and turned away. So I guess that brings us to the lemon part. Lemon laws are consumer protection efforts most famously associated with automobiles, the acidic fruit in question referring to a car that does not run right. Because this is a fact recent car purchasers usually discover only after the thing is driven off the lot, lemon laws are meant to protect consumers from making a very expensive mistake. So this return policy is great when what we're talking about are inanimate hunks of metal. Dogs and cats, on the other hand, are living creatures with hearts and lungs and brains and nerve endings, which brings to mind a question. Can an animal be a lemon? Okay, maybe that's a bit existential for Monday morning. So try this on. Aside from some pretty good parts, like forcing the pet store to reimburse pet owners for reasonable and foreseeable veterinary costs, the legislation also provides that within 1 year after the date of sale, if a licensed veterinarian states in writing that the dog or cat possesses a congenital or hereditary condition that adversely affects the health of the animal or requires either hospitalization or non-elective surgery, then the animal can be returned to the pet shop for a full refund, or exchanged for an animal of comparable value. Now, as a means of consumer protection, this sounds great, but what about the returned animal? Now, knowing what I know about human nature, I'm sure the pet store will spare no expense to give the defective animal the finest veterinary care, followed by a long and fruitful life on a big farm with tall grass, lots of sunshine, and tons of rubber balls. There they will have their bellies rubbed by a steady succession of children, or if they're cats, just left alone, and will be protected from disease and sorrow by unicorns, or hobbits, or Glinda the Good Witch. Their choice. I'm exaggerating, of course, because hobbits don't exist. In fact, it is probably best not to think at all about what happens to defective animals returned to the pet store after a year with owners, kind of like that kid in the closet in Ursula K. Le Guin's The Ones Who Walk Away from Amillis. Look, I'm not saying we do anything about this, but can't we at least come up with more accurate titles for our legislation? For instance, in this case, instead of the Illinois Puppy Lemon Law, how about the Illinois Sorry You Have Hip Dysplasia, You Get What You Deserve Law? Or the Illinois I Know You Lived With That Family for a Year, But It Turns Out You're Not Perfect, So Get Used to That Cage Law? Now that I say them out loud, those don't really roll off the tongue, and there's nothing cute or helpful to a politician's re-election effort. So how about the Illinois, a pet is not a distraction for your kids like an Xbox or cable TV. It is an expensive and time-consuming living creature. So think it through before you get one. And patriots are good law. Yeah, I like that one. I'm Travis McDade.
Travis McDade is the curator of the Law Rare Books Library at the University of Illinois. You can hear Legal Issues in the News every Monday on Morning Edition or listen online at will.illinois.edu.
WILL programs are made possible by the Illinois Shakespeare Festival, presenting Shakespeare's Comedy of Errors and Macbeth, plus Failure, a Love Story by Philip Dawkins from July 6th through August 10th at Ewing Manor in Bloomington. Ticket information is available at thefestival.org or 309-438-2535.
Singer-songwriter Jason Isbell has gone through some big life changes lately. He's newly married and newly sober.
I'd done one other show sober that I could recall in 10 years. It was terrifying.
But those were different days.
The music of Jason Isbell, later on All Things Considered from NPR News.
Those were different days.
Today from 4 to 7 on AM 580 and from 5 to 7 on FM 90.9.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Monday, June 10th, 2013. It's the birthday of biologist and writer Edward O. Wilson, born in Birmingham, Alabama, in 1929. When he was a boy, his father's job as a government accountant forced the family to move so often that he attended 14 different public schools in 11 years. In his autobiography, The Naturalist, he wrote, "A nomadic existence made nature my companion of choice, because the outdoors was the one part of my world I perceived to hold rock steady." His research was presented in the books Sociobiology and the Pulitzer Prize-winning On Human Nature. It's the birthday of novelist Saul Bellow, born in Lachine, Quebec. He grew up in Chicago, the city that would become the setting of many of his novels. He was often sick as a child, spent his time reading the classics of literature. He once said, "I came humbly, hat in hand, to literary America. I didn't ask for much. I had a book or two to publish. I didn't expect to make any money at it. I saw myself at the tail end of a great glory." Bellow was working part-time for the Encyclopedia Britannica when his first novel, Dangling Man, was published. It didn't sell a lot of copies, so he went off and served in the Marines. He spent most of 1948 in France with his wife, hoping to gather material for a book. But he grew depressed. His novel was going nowhere. The weather was dreary. So he started writing a new novel about a young man's adventures in Chicago just before the Great Depression. That novel became The Adventures of Augie March, and it was his first big success. Bellow's other novels include Henderson the Rain King, Herzog, and Humboldt's Gift. He died in 2005 at the age of 89. It's the birthday of novelist and short story writer James Salter, born James Horowitz in New York City in 1925. He went to West Point, became a pilot in the Air Force, and flew 100 combat missions in the Korean War, and served as a squadron leader before retiring to become a writer. First two novels were based on his experience as a combat pilot, and next came what he called The First Good Thing I Wrote, A Sport and a Pastime, a novel about the love affair between a Yale dropout living in Paris and a working-class French girl. James Salter said, "The writer's life exists for only a small number. It can be glorious, especially after death. there are provincial, national, and world writers. One should compete in one's class, despise riches, as Whitman says, and take off your hat to no one. And here's a poem by Liesel Mueller entitled Losing My Sight. I never knew that by August the birds are practically silent, only a twitter here and there. Now I notice. Last spring their noisiness taught me the difference between screamers and whistlers and cooers and, oh, the coloraturas. I have already mastered the subtlest pitches in our cat's elegant Chinese. As the river turns muddier before my eyes, its sighs and little smacks grow louder. Like a spy, I pick up things indiscriminately, the long approach of a truck, car door slammed in the dark, the nightlife of animals shrieks and hisses, sex and plunder in the garage. Tonight the crickets spread static across the air, a continuous rope of sound extended to me, the